Coming up on KUCB News, a World War II mortar has been destroyed in Southeast, and the debate is heating up over this year's PFD. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. On Alaska's boys basketball team took second place in the Seward Invitational this past weekend. On Thursday, the Raiders beat Hutchison in a tight game 51-46. On Friday, the boys led Eielson by 2 going into the fourth quarter, but the Ravens scored 21 in that final period to take the win 59-52. On Saturday, the Raiders were back with purpose, stepping up their defense to put Seward away by a comfortable margin of 15 points. And each night of the tournament, the team had double-digit contributions from Trevor Wilson and Dallas Lane. Up next, the Raider boys and girls will host their final home games of the season this weekend against Tok. KUCB will broadcast all the games live here on 89.7 FM, so check out our Facebook page later this week for a full game schedule. A museum in Haines was closed for several days due to safety concerns about an antique mortar that was found in its inventory. But as KHNS's Henry Leisha reports, an explosives team with the U.S. Army removed the device last week and detonated it in a remote location.
Haines Sheldon Museum Director Helen Alton said that the World War II era mortar was made for the Japanese Army.
It looks like a torpedo, kind of. It's kind of a teardrop shape with wings on the end. It's about probably about 16, 20 inches long, and then 81 millimeters is the diameter. It's kind of heavy. We handled it quite a bit.
According to Alton, it was donated to the museum by a late Haines resident who had a collection of items from World War II that he used for history talks.
His uncle was in the Pacific Theater and he was in the European Theater at the same time, and so this was part of his uncle's collecting.
When museum staff carried out a review of its inventory last year, the mortar was identified as an item that may not fit with the museum's mission to preserve the history of the Chilkat Valley. Alton said that staff examined the object at a recent meeting. They were trying to find out more information about its origins.
We didn't have any paperwork that said it had been deactivated. We had no good documentation. And so we were trying to figure out how would we determine that. And so we called the police to find out what they would know.
Haines Dispatch received the call about the mortar on January 25th. When Haines police officer Chris Brown went to the museum to examine the explosive, he was unable to determine whether it posed a safety risk. So images of the mortar were sent to the 716th Explosive Ordnance Disposal Company out of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. The unit is tasked with responding to unexploded military munitions found in communities throughout Alaska. It advised the police department to close the museum to the public and staff. Captain Brandon Browning of the 716th EOD said that further assessment of the mortar was required.
From the pictures we received, it seemed possible that it could be a legitimate Japanese piece of ordnance from World War II. So it's just always best to treat something as worst-case scenario. And so if it looks real, it's best to treat it as real and the precautions that go along with it.
A team of six soldiers arrived in Haines by helicopter on Thursday. Around noon, three members of the 716th EOD entered the museum to assess the mortar. Alton said the team reported that the device did, in fact, pose a safety risk.
They spent quite a bit of time in there. They did x-rays and they weighed it. Somebody did try to empty it, but it isn't low enough in weight for it to be completely empty, and they found a haze in the pictures that suggests that there's still some explosive in there.
The team of soldiers decided the safest option was to dispose of the device by detonating it. According to Haynesboro Police Chief Heath Scott, the mortar was transported to a gravel pit along the Haines Highway and detonated using C4. This isn't the first time that an old explosive has been unearthed in Haines. In 2007, a tourist discovered an unexploded grenade near the Port Chilkoot dock. 4 years later, a mortar was discovered during a cleanup of the same area. The explosives were left over from military preparations at Fort Seward during World War II. Ironically, the Haines Sheldon Museum was scheduled to open a new exhibit on Friday, commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Aughtoo, the only ground battle of World War II to take place on American soil. Alton said it is a shame the mortar couldn't be used for the exhibit.
You know, if it was empty, it would be great because it's really cool. I mean, it's a really interesting looking piece. But I don't think it's going to make it into an exhibit case, I'm afraid.
Museum staff were able to return to their offices Friday. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Following the discovery of that mortar in Haines, KUCB is rebroadcasting this story from April of 2017 when an Unalaska hiker found World War II-era ordnance near Mount Ballyhoo. We aired this report after an Air Force bomb squad flew out to destroy the shell. During the war, hundreds of soldiers were stationed atop Mount Ballyhoo, one of the tallest peaks in Unalaska. Last week, a local hiker found an explosive reminder of that wartime past tucked away in the tundra at the base of the mountain. So?
The Air Force came out and we blew it up.
Chris Honan is the city investigator, and he hosted the explosive ordnance disposal team that flew in from Anchorage to deal with the shell.
It was old World War II. It looked maybe 120 millimeter. It's usually fired like from howitzers type cannons.
Some 75 years after the war, Honan can't be sure why road maintenance turned up this piece of ordnance at this spot, but he has an idea.
It was a good size round. Probably from training, they had like, 50,000 soldiers, so they probably did some training and fired rounds here and there. It's wartime, so people were always rushing around, throwing stuff around.
Back in the present day, Honan says the EOD squad did not rush the controlled explosion that disposed of the shell. The three-man team studied the ordnance carefully before driving it to the secluded gun range on the far side of the mountain and blowing it up. Civilians were not allowed within sight of the explosion, and the EOD team did not take questions afterward. But Honan says it was fun to watch the blast from his spot, a safe 500 feet away from the detonation.
It wasn't bad. I would say it was probably a couple pounds of C4. You could feel it. Gave a little shake.
In his 7 years on the job, Honan says the military has come to the island 4 or 5 times to dispose of World War II ordnance.
It's not too common, but it's good to be on the lookout for it.
That was a KUCB story from 2017. Local officials remind Unalaskans to call the police if they come across ordnance on the island. They say civilians should not handle explosives for their own safety. Governor Mike Dunleavy wants Alaskans to receive permanent fund dividends of roughly $3,000 this year. While his proposal follows up on a campaign pledge that helped him become governor in November, it won't be easy for state lawmakers to agree on the next PFD. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has more on what's shaping up to be a high-stakes debate.
Every dollar the state pays out in permanent fund dividends is a dollar that won't pay for government services. It's pretty simple math, but recently the legislature's nonpartisan budget expert, David Teal, made it clear finding a solution won't be easy.
The competition between dividends and government services creates a huge fiscal problem for you legislators.
Alaskans elected Governor Dunleavy and many legislators based in part on a desire to base dividends on a generous formula set in a 1982 law and used until 3 years ago. But when combined with current oil prices, the so-called full PFDs would lead to a projected gap of more than $1.5 billion between what the state spends and what it brings in. To close the gap would cost more than the state spends on public education each year. It's also more than the state spends combined on 12 of the 14 departments of state government, including transportation and public safety.
Well, you're looking at 30% reduction in 1 year. That's going to be a jaw-dropper and I'm going to need a bottle of Rolaids to get through the budget process.
That's Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman, who's getting ready for an intense debate over cutting the budget to pay full PFDs this year. He thinks ultimately lawmakers will figure out a way to deliver full PFDs, at least for this year. and he expects voters to push back against any proposal to cut them.
Oh, it'll be a hotly debated issue, especially if we don't pay out the statutory formula-derived dividend. Frankly, I think the public will throw more elected officials out on the street. And I think if you go back and look at the last election, there's a few of them that got their butts bounced out over it.
About three-quarters of the permanent fund is protected from the legislature spending it. But that still leaves $16 billion in fund earnings that the legislature could spend. Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez could serve on the House Finance Committee. He says he wants a full PFD, but only if it makes financial sense. Ortez describes how he will approach the budget.
I'll take a look at that, see what cuts are being called for in order to pay out that full PFD, and then I'm going to put together a survey and send it to all the registered voters in my district and say, okay, here's the situation. If we are going to pay a full PFD this year, these are the cuts that we're going to be looking at in order to pay for that. What do you guys think?
Ortez says voters may have endorsed Dunleavy's position on the PFD, but they did it without knowing how his promise to reduce the size of government would affect the services they receive, basic services like public education and the ferry system.
Governor Dunleavy got the endorsement of a significant portion of the population of voters. But what didn't go along with that is the opportunity costs that were going to be associated with those full payouts.
Those trade-offs will become clearer on February 13th when Dunleavy releases an amended budget. North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson is concerned the legislature will spend in a way that will threaten the permanent fund itself. She says the legislature should focus on cutting government spending.
We have to get our house in order, or else it's not just about the dividend anymore. We don't even have the population to be able to possibly tax people to be able to sustain the government that we currently have. And that, I think, doesn't just scare individuals, but the businesses and the potential businesses that come here.
In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Tomorrow, we'll bring you more on the governor's recent slate of proposals, specifically his plan to amend the Alaska Constitution to limit state spending and to require public votes on any new taxes or changes to the PFD. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., President Donald Trump has nominated David Bernhardt to be the next Secretary of the Interior, replacing Ryan Zinke. Bernhardt was second in command under Zinke and has served as acting secretary since Zinke resigned amid ethics complaints. Zinke was a showy frontman for the Interior Department, and that was clear from day one when he rode a horse to its headquarters in Washington. Zinke had a big persona and a big cowboy hat to go with it. But by contrast, Bernhardt is a dark-suited attorney with a mind for natural resource law and policy. He previously worked as a lobbyist representing several energy companies. He also represented the state of Alaska in 2014 in an unsuccessful lawsuit seeking to conduct seismic testing in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Bernhardt is an enthusiastic supporter of oil development on federal lands and waters, including in the Arctic. In response to Bernhardt's nomination, Congressman Raul Grijalva said that putting a former fossil fuels lobbyist in a position to regulate his former clients is, quote, a perfect example of everything wrong with this administration, end quote. Grijalva is the Arizona Democrat who chairs the House Resources Committee. When Bernhardt took the deputy secretary job, he agreed to recuse himself on matters involving more than two dozen of his former clients. But that list did not include the state of Alaska, and all of its recusals expire in August. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.